Great. Another episode, ladies. And we got Carly back again. Hi. So welcome back, Carly. Welcome
Thank
back.
You, guys.
Yeah, we started off here talking about Bitcoin. And I've got a little bit of man flu today. But whenever we talk about Bitcoin, I perk up. I'm like, yes, let's talk about Bitcoin. We did promise everyone that we were going to do a Bitcoin episode. And this is going to be the one.
Stop promising and start delivering.
Okay, cool. So so this is not going to be... Well, let's just clarify. We were going to talk about financial wellness.
Yes.
And I was going
to
be
dominantly... Now it's linked to overall holistic wellness. Because let's be honest, it's a big, big reason why people are super stressed and feeling insecure. And worried about their futures.
Everything. And I actually, when we spoke about it, when we drew the circles on around wellness, I think financial wellness is the center. It's the thing that no one wants to talk about. It's money. It's uncomfortable. It's complicated. It's embarrassing. It's everything. And so your identity, everything lives within your financial health. Yep. I think if you get your financial health right, well, when I say right, under control... orchestrated well, then everything
gives you security.
Well, then health becomes more easier. Mental health becomes easier. Yep. Physical health becomes easier. Mm-hmm. Gut health becomes easier. Yep. All these other things. But so anyway, that episode
everything
needs
becomes
to come.
More affordable and sustainable. So
yeah, it's not about being wealthy. It's about understanding money better. And the problem that we do have, I find, among certain communities specifically, I find like the Jewish community, the Indian community, they do a very good job of teaching.
Like intergenerational wealth.
Yeah, well, they teach money. They teach how money works. They teach how businesses work because they establish businesses, etc. And those communities are very strong because of that.
They're savvy.
I've noticed that. But like, broadly speaking, the black community, the colored community, which is the majority of the population, those things are not really spoken of well. I think there's more survival aspect that we've had through the last few generations, and we don't have that financial acumen.
What should be taught at school. Yeah. I mean, I was so surprised. Mm. You know, Bets and Amber finished school years ago, and when they came out of school, they didn't even know how to open like a bank account. So they were like, okay, how do I get started with my life, with my adulting? You know, and I was like, huh? How do they not teach you how to start a business at school and tax and that and business... you know, savvy. Like, it's really quite shocking.
But you know what I find is like how few people understand money. But like when I walk, because I got so deep into Bitcoin, forget Bitcoin for a second.
I live with you and I still feel like I don't understand money.
it's the history of money, where money comes
things
from, how money
aren't
works.
Getting more expensive. Our money is getting weaker.
There you go. Your groceries are not getting
it's
more
like,
expensive.
That's wait, yeah. Just repeat.
You are trained well. Good. That's inflation. Anyway, let's get to the topic at hand, and that is today we're talking about gut health.
Yeah.
We've done a couple of webinars about this, Carly. We've had you on. Mm. I mean, I've spoken to you about it, and I must be honest, when I started getting into this topic, it was probably one of the most fascinating topics because to me...
You love the gut.
I know, because...
It's also, again, something that people don't like to talk about.
True.
Like money and poop.
Yeah.
It's like all the gut.
Okay, that's actually... When I first met Lisa, like years and years and years ago, and she was the first person that said, if you don't look down or something like that...
Don't frown, look down. I used to say that.
But then you used to tell me about texture of poop, color of poop, and I was like, this hot chick's talking to me about poop.
Soft serve ice cream, medium brown.
I didn't know how I felt when you started that. I was like,
and it makes you uncomfortable, not her uncomfortable.
Definitely not. I get excited when I talk about everything that's in the potty. Everything that's in your tummy and how it's it kind of is the center, just like it is the center of our bodies. It's like the center of the wheel.
Mm.
It really is the center of our health, and it's something that we should be talking about more freely and openly. Mm. Something that I've been speaking to Bella about since she was little. I was like, if you need to go to the loo at school, my girl, you go. And you encourage all your friends to talk about it, to kind of humanize it, to not make it this taboo thing that girls don't do that.
Mm.
You know, you take your friend by the hand and you take her to the loo and you say, I'll take you. You know what I mean? You don't just like ignore all the signs. And then when you get home, the first thing you do is you run through that door and you run to the bathroom because you've been keeping it in all day. And I talk to her about that. You know, if it doesn't go out, it stays in. Mm-hmm. All those toxins, all that waste that's meant to be eliminated. If you ignore the signs because you're too like embarrassed, then all of those toxins get reabsorbed and what that does to your body. And then I talk about it from a beauty perspective, like what it does to your skin, you know. And then she's like, what? It gives me pimples. Yeah. So like I kind of just make it more like normal. I'm trying to get her to be the one little girl in her class that just speaks about it openly and encourages girls to like, come on, guys, it's natural.
So important.
It's human.
Yeah.
And it's something that we just need to kind of like, not put Well, like women on yeah, and also not put like women on pedestals, that we don't do that. And, you know, it is just a normal daily biological process that we just need to kind of just chill
like
about.
We're going to go into the depths and breadths and width of it, but like I've heard some stories from both of you where like people come to you, Carly, and they haven't gone to the loo in like a week.
Sometimes only like once a month. I've had clients like that. And you would think, right, that they'd have this huge body. You know, that they would be really obese because, like, all that stuff is in them. You know, how many meals is that? Like, 3 meals a day for 3 weeks?
Yeah.
You know, 21 meals. Is that how
that's
much
a week.
Is? Yeah, that's a week. So that's like 63 meals that are inside their body. And they're not necessarily overweight, eh? That's what's so crazy. However, they don't look well.
Your math's off. It's 19 okay, meals, 30 days.
It's whatever. It's a lot of meals, okay? It's a lot of meals and nothing has passed out and all of that's just being reabsorbed and they look gray. Often they look gray and they've got big dark rings under their eyes and they don't even look overweight and you think something is like really wrong. You just look at them and say they're not looking good. And they're not feeling good.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I mean, some ladies only go to the loo when it's that time of the month. Like the hormones kind of kick things in and they like go more regularly. But yeah, I've heard horror stories.
That's incredible. So look, anyways, for those of people that don't know who's who, yeah. So I'm the dumb guy. I'm like literally the dumb guy. I don't even know why I'm on these podcast episodes. Because I guess I represent people that don't know the details and it keeps the two of you, i.e. Carly and Lisa, sane in terms of how you describe things. So I'll ask the dumb questions. And for those that don't know Carly, Carly is a registered dietitian. Say something. You haven't said something yet.
I'm waiting for a
yeah.
Tell us a little bit. Just give us a snapshot. So for people listening for the first time on the episode, not everyone knows who Carly is, right? Okay. So
yeah, I'm a registered dietitian, been in practice for 10 years now. So it's a long time. Wow. I see outpatients and consult with patients day to day. So I see a variety of different issues. Gut health being a big one, and it's a big highlight on all of my patient forms, and it's something we always talk about and definitely is rare to see perfect gut health, put it that way.
So out of your patients that show up, how many so many people don't know that what's wrong with me is my gut. It's like people have mood swings, people have dietary issues, they don't, like the way they eat is different, but then they don't really recognize
how it's connected to so much, to autoimmunity, to brain fog, to Alzheimer's, to so much. But I think the knowledge is growing. Consumers and patients are becoming more self-aware and starting to learn and read and understanding that healing the gut is so important to the homeostasis and balance of the rest of your body, which is really important.
We should be learning at school.
Yeah.
Gut health,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Considering the fact that it's one of the main pillars of our overall health. In fact, I think the most important one of all, and how it is linked to cognitive decline, mental disorders or mental health issues,
mood depression, regulation.
And immunity.
Well, also like nutrient absorption, all that other stuff. But
everything.
But just let's go back to like the very basics. The fact that blows me away about the guy. That every time, like, and it's you, Carly, that made this clear to me was we are more, ourselves, than ourselves.
Yeah.
Which is a very weird thing. That like the microbiome is a set of cells that if you numbered them up, they actually outstrip.
Well, it's not cells, it's living organisms, right? So it's bacteria, fungi, viruses that live mostly within the digestive tract, but also on the skin and other parts of the body. Right. And yeah, the microbiome and the sum total of all of those organisms far outweigh human genetics and human cells.
That's incredible. So we are more, not ourselves.
Yeah. We're more bacteria and fungi and viruses and all of these other little bugs than we are actually human.
So I was thinking the other day we're watching the series where the fungi takes over human beings, like cordyceps.
Oh gosh.
Cordyceps actually start attacking humans. And
you and your zombie
fetish. Is it sci-fi?
Yeah, zombie apocalypse stuff.
Okay,
and stuff.
Go.
This
is his next
love besides Bitcoin. He loves zombies. It's like he reckons that it's going to happen at some stage in our existence.
It's happened already.
Zombies are going to be a real thing.
People stay into glowing glass rectangles all day. So we're zombies. But yeah, so I mean, that's a fascinating stat that there's so much yeah. of what we are. That's not who we are. That the microbiome on if you fractioned all the mm-hmm. total amount of what it is, it outstrips human cells in the body.
And that's there should be a more beneficial relationship or a symbiotic or mutualistic relationship between those bugs and us as humans. So they use us for food and substrates, and in return they give us so much. They are the main source of our immune function and immune system. 90% of serotonin is made in the gut, and that's our happy hormone.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Serotonin's made in the gut. Mm. And the microbiome is responsible
for it. It's a brain gut
microbiome
axis.
Plays a role. Mm. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know
so that. So 90%, most people think serotonin is made in the brain, but very small percentage of it is.
That's fascinating.
And so when you say my gut, you know, I can feel it in my gut.
Mm. Oh, yeah, the gut
and how that feeling of like butterflies slash anxiety, mm. like you just know, and they say, well, what's your gut feel? Mm. That comes from that. It's like that emotion, that fear, that anxiety, that restlessness, it's coming from the pit of your stomach. That's a real thing. That brain gut axis is a real thing.
Yeah, or needing to run to the loo before going on stage, or you know, saying a speech as kids. That's
yeah. So when you're standing in front of the principal's office, me a lot. So and then you feel that nervousness, or you feel it in your gut. You feel it in your gut, and when you're in a state where you look at interview someone and you just feel in your gut this is not the right person. So it's this. I've heard people call it the second brain.
Yes. Yeah, there's that bi-directional communication.
Primary brain.
Interesting, yeah.
Some people call it that, yeah. Mm.
So the gut talks to the brain and the brain talks to the gut. So it's that two-way communication, which is really important. So if the gut microbiome is healthy and in balance, it gives us all of these amazing benefits. Helps with nutrient absorption, helps with immune function, helps with mood regulation, helps with metabolism of drugs and harmful substrates as
Even
well.
Even weight loss.
Yes, definitely. Mm. There's so much coming out in terms of the the structure and the makeup of your gut microbiome can influence weight loss. That's where
fecal
transplants coming in.
Give me an example of the most acute effect that happened in a patient where you identified it and it fixed it and it was life-changing.
I don't think you can fix it overnight. It's a gradual change, and usually the most noticeable symptoms will be the direct function of the gut. So usually it's either a constantly runny or loose diarrhea-like tummy clearing up and going to more formed, normal. Mm. We look at the Bristol stool chart, so anyone can Google that
I've
and have a look.
I've taken photos for you, baby, and I've sent them to you saying, check this out. I went for it's a whole nother subject, okay, but it was like a proper colonic irrigation, and they had this big chart on the back of the door.
Wait, you guys are talking big stuff. Colonic irrigation?
Yes. Okay. It's not something we want to talk about today because it's not everybody believes in it. There's a lot of doctors that are like, don't do that. But I've done it for years.
Yo, and what is colonic? It sounds like you go to a farm, you take your pants down and...
kind of like that. Mm. But it's with proper trained people. I mean, people that are trained in colonic health, and they do this in a very, very professional manner. It's not like a kalemic board where you're lying down
do
and you...
Do what, babe?
So you're lying on a bed and everything is sanitized, everything is disposable.
Just by the way, Lisa's been doing this on and off. Like, I keep seeing you.
I started
going
my journey 15 years ago with colonic. It's called colonic hydrotherapy, and you can actually become a colonic hydrotherapist, and you go and you study and you do an entire not necessarily a diploma, but it is a very, very in-depth course with professionals, and there is actually a body that kind of regulates everything to make sure that you're doing the right course and that you're not harming people and you're not doing your own version, but you actually are getting a qualification in it. And so you lie down on a bed. Everything's sanitized,
so disposable.
Steph, why are you asking this?
No, exactly. My wife is going away to go lie on a bed to do what?
Cleanse. The water's cleansed and it's heated at a certain degree. The angle of the bed is at a certain angle. There's a little thingy that's put into the anus, and it has very, very body temperature water that is, you know, kind of pumped into your body, and then another pump. So there's not a two-way valve. It's like a one-way valve. Water goes in and then the nonsense comes out, and they can actually view it through a viewing tube. They can see like what's coming out to see if you've got parasites, if you've got worms, if your food is undigested, if there's bubbles, if there's too much mucus, if there's too much oil. They can identify your stool. So it's, I guess it's not as scientific as like doing one of those biome tests, you know, where you poop in a cup and then you send off
your... A visual one. Yeah.
But a lot of people are really, really bunged up. They haven't gone to the loo for a long time.
So it's kind of like an enema that flushes things out. But,
yeah, but there's someone, you're laying on a bed, someone shoving a pipe into your bum.
Yes, and but it's not someone, it's a nurse. A lot of the time it's a nurse or it's a really qualified specialist. I've only got to people that have got these fancy, fancy machines. Like, it's a really expensive setup and they have studied for years. They've done thousands of these and they've helped a lot of people to kind of get their peristalsis moving again, to help with major blockages or constipation, people that really need detoxifying.
Can I tell you something? I bet you people listen to this. Obviously, we're not advocating for this therapy. Or whatever, but the broad majority of people do this are not guys.
50% of her clients are men.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Steph.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, for me, my prostate exam is like traumatic. My prostate exam is the most difficult.
But listen, we don't want to talk about colonic irrigation and hydrotherapy, but it is something that I have done many times. I'd say at least 50 times in my life, maybe even 100.
Okay, so they're irrigating your bum.
Yeah, they are.
Your colon.
They're helping you to move along stuff. I mean, your entire colon is reached. Many, many meters.
Does this hurt?
Not at all.
Not at all?
Not at all.
Is it fun?
Yeah, you chat. No.
Okay.
No, it's not fun. Okay. You're chatting. It's a little awkward. There's movement. You massage your tummy if you need to. You talk about what's going through the viewing tube if you need to. And then it gives recommendations afterwards. Like, listen, there's too much oil. There's this. You need to go for a stool sample test. You need to go see a dietitian. You're not digesting your food properly. You're not chewing your food properly. There was a whole mushroom that came out. You didn't even chew it. You know what I mean? So you talk about mastication, you talk about digestion, about digestive enzymes, you talk about pre and probiotics, more fiber in the diet. Just generally, it's lifestyle related.
So colonic hydrotherapy, Carly, what's your take on colonic hydrotherapy? I know it's very controversial.
There's different schools
right?
of yeah. thoughts, and I think the potentially negative side is that it can wash out the good stuff.
And that's
where we tend to worry. And the same as coming up with fecal transplants. So if you, let's say, are taking the poop from dried poop encapsulated from a non-obese patient and then transplanting it into a obese patient to try and elicit weight loss results. There has been research done in this.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Encapsulated poop.
Yes.
Is done so what?
From a healthy a person that's healthy, that doesn't have a weight loss issue, they generally have a better
metabolism
than somebody who's obese. It can actually be genetically like
so
that.
You're so you're doing a microbiome transport.
It's a transplant.
Fecal
to populate
transplant.
Your gut with the good bacteria from the slim person into an obese person.
But. There's much more caution coming into it now because, yes, you're getting those good genes, but what other negative microbiome strains might that patient have? So is there certain microbes that are linked to maybe a higher risk of cancer or Alzheimer's or diabetes? You don't. So it's very difficult and you might be getting half of the
Is this because it is just not well understood yet?
It's completely such a new science and it really, really is very, very, very infantile in its research. So some of the gastroenterologists are doing it, but I think it requires a lot of caution and it shouldn't just be done willy-nilly. It shouldn't be done without a lot of trained experts looking into it for a very, very specific reason. Because if you're taking the good, there's going to be some bad as well, because we all have a balance of good versus potentially harmful bad bacteria. And if you throw that balance off, that's when we have dysbiosis, which is an imbalance of the good and the bad. And that dysbiotic state is where we see all of the negative impacts coming into play. So whether it's IBS-like symptoms or the weight issues or
leaky
increased
gut.
Risk of chronic disease. Mm. Yeah, leaky gut can be triggered or highlighted or, exaggerated by an imbalance in the microbiome. The colorectal cancer, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, the imbalanced neurotransmitters, so the serotonin and dopamine is linked, hormonal
inflammation.
Well,
hey? It's a big one.
Visceral fat is linked to dysbiosis.
Why are you looking
at
me when you're saying visceral fat? Jeez.
I'm not.
Just be nice. I am a patient. Let's just go back to first principles about this, right? So, so I remember when I went for that major test, like I turned 50, I was 49. Remember,
when we did all your bloods.
Mm. Oh, we did bloods. We did
colonoscopy.
Yes.
And
yes,
when
yes,
I went into the colonoscopy, I was put under. Thank goodness. And they,
did you do the top scope as well? The gastroscopy.
I did both.
Okay, good.
I did both, and the doctor was incredible, and like it was amazing, and even the experience was like.
And they say you should go for that from the age of 50 onwards.
Correct.
Yeah.
I, when I turned 50, I think when I turned 49, I went. Yes. Remember, I went and did the whole big. Yes. Because of my heart.
Yeah.
Because that big 5-0 was coming and you're like, hell, I need to go for every test under the sun. Yeah. You really did.
Yeah.
If there's a family history of bowel or colorectal cancer, then that age is a little bit younger. So it is really important.
Well, I heard now it's like when you're 40, 41, because of the weight.
It's getting earlier and earlier.
Yeah, because we're eating so many processed foods and
stress
and all these things that influence our gut, that it's actually gone from like 55 all the way down to 40 now.
Yeah.
And in some places in the world, they recommend like, if you're 35 in your late 30s, you should go for a test already. So
I think it's a good idea, Steph, to maybe debunk the scariness of it. Because I actually had a patient the other day who was saying, I'm so scared, I've been putting it off. It's really not that bad, is it?
It wasn't.
I mean, you've done it. So.
Yeah, and I am a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
Like for me, colon irrigation, farming stuff, like no, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to shove a pipe up my bum. Unless I really have to. I'm not doing
that. Unless you're under general anesthetic or
a lot of it.
Yeah.
Like for days.
Oh my god.
This gives away so much about myself. But so when I went and did that test, they discovered that there was something like a foreign bacteria in my gut that normally
H. pylori.
Yeah, that.
Yes.
And then he gave me things for it.
Yes.
And apparently this, like, it lives in your gut for a long time. It can cause cancer.
100%. So it's more in the stomach. So H. pylori is a bacteria. It is common. It can be exacerbated by stress. And it can cause gastritis, which is inflammation of the stomach lining, which if that isn't treated, can eventually lead to stomach cancer. It's one of the biggest causes of stomach cancer. Yeah.
And then he told me that this thing can live in you, like you born with it, and it just,
and you can pass it on. So you can pass it on to me. So remember, you said that I should ideally be treated as well for it at the same time, so that you don't give it to me, I give it back to you, give it back to me, I give it back to you.
And you can test for it. You don't have to do a scope to look for it. You can do a stool test to check for H. pylori as well.
Okay, this sounds hectic. A stool test. What does that mean?
Could be with a doctor or
Lancet,
a dietitian.
Or
exactly.
Okay, but so wait, just
I had to do that, so by the way. So my fascination with gut health goes way back, but probably when I decided to give up meat, because I used to get a lot of, like, it felt like I was inflamed. Like I'd eat a piece of steak and the next day I'd have a hot belly. It's all I could say. It's like hot, busy belly.
Yes.
And from that I'd get fatigued. I'd get headaches. I'd feel like I needed to have a nap kind of 2 p.m. in the day. And that was just a personal thing. So since then I've obviously done my DNA and it says that one of the worst things that I can personally eat is like bride meat. Like
processed blackened meat.
I just felt so revolting when I ate it. I enjoyed it at the time, but afterwards it didn't enjoy me. So I had this like fascination with guts, and when I cut out meat personally, that's when all my gut issues disappeared, number one. But I did have a scary thing. Remember when we were first dating, babe, and I'd done a whole cleanse. I'd done our lemonade cleanse. I'd cut out everything, no wheat, no dairy, no sugar, no processed foods. I was like so clean. I'd cut out caffeine, sugar, and I was just eating, you know, food from the earth, not from a tree, I say, not from a factory. And I was eating like that for a couple of weeks, and then I got a cold. And I took all your Carenzas and your ACCs, and I was like dosing myself all these fizzy effervescent things, and my stomach went into a spasm. It went into like a complete spasm. Mm. And I just started like writhing all over the bed going, oh my gosh, something's wrong with my stomach. My stomach. Rushed to hospital, and I had a massive block from having such a clean system for weeks to having all this, you know, fizzy stuff that's all completely fake. In my body, and my bowel went into a spasm, and it was quite a scary thing. And I had to have, you know, kind of all sorts of tests done. And then I had, a stool softener and all that stuff to kind of get me to the blockage to kind of disintegrate over time. That was the first scary thing that I had. Also had my brother who had a massive bowel issue, almost died about 3 years ago. That was scary. But I also had a weird thing. So I went for like a little procedure a couple of years ago, and you can often pick up something in theater. So there can be gas bubbles, air bubbles, but you can often pick up like different bacteria in a theater, which is crazy because you think it'd be so sterilized. But within about a month of having the surgery done, my tummy, I just had constant diarrhea for a month. Mm-hmm. And I was getting very thin. I was like not absorbing any nutrients. It was like I was eating. I don't know if you remember, I knew at this stage. It was like COVID times. Yes. And I just, everything I ate, I just, like my body wasn't absorbing any of the nutrients. And I just was getting like thinner and thinner. And I was just literally had diarrhea all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I went, I had to do the stool sample, guys. Oh my gosh, I had to poop in a cup. That was hectic. Passing it over to the person behind the counter, this warm.
You have to remember they're used to that
thing. I know. They're like, oh, thank you very much. I'm like, oh, please never remember my face ever. And I got the results about 4 days later. I went to a top gastroenterologist person and she called it a gawk. So I was like, what's a gawk? And she says, God only knows.
Oh.
So I was like, is this a thing? And they actually didn't know. And you know, I tried everything. I was taking probiotics. I was taking herbal remedies. I was trying to change my diet. I was eating enough fiber. I was trying to do everything I could and actually started taking these like herbal drops. And I don't know if it was just a coinkydink or if it really worked, but within 3 days of taking these drops, which are quite well known, it just stopped and I started having like a normal stool. But for a month, I had diarrhea and they called it a gawk. I mean, this is the top test. All my results were normal, but I literally just had a runny tummy for a month.
You know, maybe this, we're going to get to it now in a sec, but this, the whole purpose of the podcast is to talk about the DNA gut test. Yeah. Maybe this test will help. But, you know, what's very interesting is when I grew up as a kid, you know, in the 70s, in the 80s, okay. Whenever a child around my granny, around my mom, in our family, friends, etc., whenever a kid was sick, you gave a kid a laxative.
Really?
That's when a kid had a fever or whatever, like, if
not good.
But it helped. It helped. Like, they give you, like, we had a regime, castor oil, or we had a thing called Luxa. I think it was a pill called Luxa or something. Okay. And it was a laxative. So this is township lingo. I know you're frowning, Tom.
No, Carly, I'm just relate. Surprised.
No. We were, in our family, you had to clean your tummy once a month.
Okay.
And you picked a Friday.
Okay.
So my mom would come home and she'd say, okay, this Friday or is it next Friday? And you pick a Friday and then you take this pill.
Yeah.
And then you poop your brains out.
The
Saturday. You know, you don't plan anything anywhere and you poop your brains out. You go to the loo like 20 times.
Okay.
And what was amazing is how we felt afterwards. It would be like horrible, horrible, horrible. But the Sunday, you'd feel like $1 million as a kid. I promise you, you'd feel like $1 million.
See, I just go for a colonic and I get the same feeling. without the laxatives.
Okay, so yeah, why we don't recommend regular use of laxatives is because it can disrupt your natural peristalsis, which is that moving of the gut to empty the contents. So individuals who may have had eating disorders or just abused laxatives often do battle with regular bowel movements later in life because it's this chemical outside intervention that's taking over the natural signaling that should be happening between the brain and the gut to say empty.
Your colon becomes lazy and it stops that contraction.
Yeah. So constipation can often result. I think, you know, once a month probably wouldn't be the end of the world, but if it becomes more frequent and if your gut becomes dependent on the laxatives, it's not great.
But what was amazing is when we did grow up, I think the point I'm trying to make is that the elders, my mom, my grandparents, they knew that your state of mind, you can't still as a kid, you can't pay attention, you got on and off fevers, they can't figure you out, there's something wrong with your gut.
Interesting.
They knew it. Like, in Afrikaans, die kind is goor.
Okay.
There's something wrong with, I don't know how to translate that into English. Die kind is goor means there's something wrong inside of them. We need to get it out of them. And I promise you, it worked every single time.
Wow.
It was dramatic. Castor oil. A lot of people have castor oil stories. But my mom grew up, and I'm thinking about her now, and I mean to make sure she listens to this episode, but up until today, I don't know my mother not drinking a thing called Black Forest tea.
Okay.
Mm. She drinks it every single night. And that's to do with her gut health.
Amazing.
And her being regular, etc. And my mom, I don't know my mom as someone that ever went down with flu.
Wow.
Ever in my entire life. I never saw her in bed with flu for days.
So we don't know if it's the tea or maybe she just has a really good gut biome.
Yeah, but I think maybe
her DNA is her genetics. She's got strong gut genetics, you know, and like she's just not going to go down with that.
But it's a two-way street. I think one is the herbal tea keeps her regular and all of that. And I think if you are regular, you've got it under control. But it's also, then you can't do without it. And that's that peristaltic movement. That's that natural way of elimination, you start losing that ability.
Yeah.
So you become dependent on it because she panics if she doesn't have this.
Okay. Like, so you don't want to be dependent on anything external to get your tummy to move. There's something called the MMC, the migrating motor complex. And that's a little electrical signal that's sent from the brain to the tummy or to the gut to tell it to empty. So this only occurs in a fasted state. So if you're nibbling and grazing all day, every day, like eating something, let's say every 30 minutes, that MMC isn't going to function properly because you need those gaps in between your meals. I always say the tummy's like a washing machine. It's got to finish the load before you put the next one in. Mm. And it's really important for gut regularity. So you've got to have your structure and your routine of eating really, really well thought out and spaced out for the tummy to work properly.
So let me ask you something. I'm going to ask you something personal. When I travel, that's something I struggle with. But it's not something, I almost have to get used to it. Like my tummy knows. For me, like I have a set routine. Like in the mornings, there's a routine.
You don't need to know about your routine.
Okay, I don't know. Thank you.
I
do a handstand and then.
Think about why, Steph. So when you're crossing time zones,
right?
Your tummy doesn't know.
No, yes.
So your gut doesn't have adjustment to whether you've just gone across the world or to the States or forwards in time or backwards in time. So breakfast time is now different. Lunchtime is now different. The gut has to adjust to that. So it's very common with traveling across time zones that the gut's going to take a while to adjust to a new routine.
You know, because it has to learn and stuff in the food,
also
right?
That. I mean,
the food you eat there and the food you eat here, your body's very used to the microbes and the bacteria and stuff that we find in our food that we buy every week.
Right.
And then you go to a different place and there's totally different bacteria there and your gut's got to get used to that. Right. So everything's kind of changing.
And the water's different and
But also what I find is tense periods in your life where you're undergoing trauma or huge psychological challenges or lots of stress, then you become irregular.
Yeah.
You just
that's that gut brain connection.
Or the opposite.
Firing again.
Or the opposite. You're just going too much.
Yes.
That's that anxiety, hey?
Yes.
Also, gut brain access again. It can affect you in different ways.
So where do, let's just take a big step back.
Okay.
Because so this gut thing's got, we understand it's in our gut. It's all these, technical terms. It's irrigation on the one side, castor oil on the other side. It's all this other stuff. But, where do I begin to diagnose, to understand my gut? Do I call Carly? And you go sit down with a dietitian like yourself and we do an intervention and there's a consultation associated with it and you take me through a questionnaire of sorts and then you kind of demystify it for me or you just kind of unpack.
I think
because it feels like something that's also very unique to who you are, your circumstances, where you are in your life, what you're eating, all of that plays a part. But how can I start the dissemination of this, and where do I begin?
Well, this is the exciting topic, right? That we're talking about today. There's a new test. So it's not the Viome test, which is an amazing test, but that is a poop sample test. That is where you actually have to give a sample of your feces, and off it goes, and it gets tested. It's a very expensive test, and off it goes to the labs, I think overseas, right? And they do it. This is a brand new test that's just launched, which is so exciting because it's been long anticipated having a test that is specifically dedicated to the gut.
Correct.
And this is brand new. It's called DNA Gut. And we wanted to kind of unpack that today. And what is it? Why is it different to any of the other tests? What is a test for? And how can the average person go about doing one?
So I'm excited about this test. And I'll tell you why. And I want to circle back to you again around it. Where's the point? Maybe beginning is not the DNA gut test. Maybe the beginning is the consultation first to establish what are we looking for? And then maybe DNA gut later.
If somebody has something wrong with their tummy, they generally know. Right? I think it's, just to clarify what's normal is going to the bathroom at least once a day, having a formed solid stool that's easy to pass, not painful, not broken up into small little bits, the Borkdrorki is what we call them, not that, not watery, not loose. So if you look at the Bristol stool chart, it's around a number 4 if you Google that. So that's ideally what we want. So
just wait a minute, you keep saying this, Bristol, where do
Bristol
I get this?
Bristol stool chart, it's a classification of
poop, can I just Google
basically.
It? Bristol.
Yeah,
Google
it. It's a PDF, it's yeah, like an infographic
it's a
showing
picture.
You.
There's loads
B-R-I-S-T-O-L.
Bristol. Yeah. Okay. So that's sort of like toothpaste or soft serve, like Lisa said. That's
medium
the sort of
brown, not too smelly.
Yeah, we don't want it to be filled with lots of fat and grease and oil. That can indicate an issue. If there's mucus in the stool, that can indicate an issue. If there's blood in the stool, that can indicate
so
an issue.
So you really have to look down and look
really
at what's
do.
Coming out of you.
Yes.
So those are some of the warning signs. If you are going to the loo more than 3 times a day and it's loose and it's watery, that's a concern. If you're going to the loo only every other day or every third day or once a week and it's sore and it's difficult to pass, that's a concern. If you're battling with severe bloating after eating where your tummy blows up like a balloon, that's a concern. If there's pain, if there's gurgling, if there's grumbling, that's a concern. So I think, yeah, people generally know because it's really debilitating when you have concerns with your tummy.
Okay, that's concerns, but I think, isn't there just a benefit? I think a lot of people have issues with their gut and they don't even know it.
Oh, for sure. Well, they don't know if it's
the majority
yeah.
of people.
They don't know the connection yeah. between gut health yeah. and like all the other symptoms that they could be feeling.
So yeah. I think there's multiple different ways of assessing the gut, and right. DNA gut is looking at human genetics. So it's a blood test that looks at human DNA that has a strong influence on the functioning of the gut. So we're looking at so many different areas, and the research that's gone into this report is incredible. It's taken years and years and years for them to come up with this report, which is really, really amazing. And it's looking at different areas of gut health. So it's not only the microbiome. We look at the microbiome and genes that influence the microbiome, but it's looking at things like gut motility. So genes that influence how quickly or slowly your gut might process and eliminate food, which is really cool. It's looking at genes that influence gut barrier integrity. So that's linked to colloquially what we call leaky gut, but in the medical world, it's more known as impaired gut lining integrity.
So it's like so the permeability.
Permeability of the gut, yeah. And that can lead to autoimmune disease.
That's
risk,
when your food
immune
leaks
function.
Out through your stomach lining into your bloodstream.
Not only food, but toxins and, yeah, okay. all sorts of
it's kind of like food is where it should be. It's in your, like, lands up where it shouldn't be in the body.
Causing a huge immune reaction.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's genes that influence how that permeability might be. Mm-hmm. And then genes that influence nutrient absorption as well. So certain things like vitamin D can be linked, vitamin D levels or deficiency can be linked to gut health and complications, intolerances. So lactose and gluten, that's included in the report as well.
And in a lot more detail than DNA health.
More genes linked, but it is still included in DNA core and DNA health as well. And then starch degradation. So some people have issues with breaking down certain types of starch. That's included in the report as well. So it really does give a genetic, and remember your genes don't change. So this isn't like a once-off. And that's, to be quite honest, the issue that I have with other microbiome tests on the market is that, yes, this is your results today, but by the time you get your results in 4 weeks' time,
could be totally
your
different.
Microbiome could be completely different.
But that's like a stool test, right?
That would be like the microbiome stool test.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily recommend that because your microbiome is ever changing. Whereas when we're looking at human genetics, that's set in stone.
That's
it's
so
constant.
Yeah.
So working on those genes, which are never going to go away, is going to be beneficial
long
term.
Well, this is a pivotal point. So
massive,
it's similar to like a blood test. People think if it's a
prick.
Yeah, like, but just like
but your bloods can change.
Yeah.
So what you eat today
saying,
affects your blood tomorrow.
Yes.
So it's important to use them in conjunction. So you would do the DNA gut test to figure out your DNA, which you were born with. So everyone listening who hasn't listened to a previous podcast or webinar about DNA, this is nothing that they did. It's nothing that they have like done to harm themselves. So if they've taken laxatives their whole lives,
correct.
Or if they've dieted, or if they've taken weird stuff like your poop stuff that your mom gave you, babe. None of the stuff that you've ever done could affect you right now. Couldn't affect your DNA.
Results,
results. So that's good to know. It's like you can do the test and know that the results that you get now at 40 or 50 would have been the same as you got if you had done it when you were 2.
Correct.
Okay, so like there's no guilt there. Yeah. Okay. So that's really important.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, you're making the investment to have the test done once ever in your life, and the results cannot change.
Correct.
But what you can change is your lifestyle and the supplementation and how you eat and all of that to determine how those genes are expressed. Poorly or well, mm-hmm. you know, so like, are you going to turn certain genes on or off? And I think that's what people don't always realize with DNA. They're scared mm-hmm. to get tested because mm-hmm. they know what they've done. And a lot of people have done weird stuff when it comes to guts. They've tried different things. They've abused certain things. They've, you know, and they're scared to have the test done because they think we're going to now find out everything that they've ever done.
Yes, it's not that. So it's not a diagnostic test. It's not something that shows us what's currently going on. It shows what you are predisposed to. Really important. People always get caught up on that topic. Genetics are what you're born with. DNA is your blueprint. We can't change the structure of those genes, but I always say we can change how the naughty genes are behaving. So we can turn the volume down on those naughty genes by making specific evidence-based personalized recommendations, whether it's supplementation or dietary changes or lifestyle changes, to work with the risky genes that you carry. And everybody carries risky genes. I've never seen a perfect report ever. But it's important to understand where to focus. Otherwise, you're like shooting in the dark.
It's so
a waste of time and money, hey? Mm-hmm. Like you're taking vitamins that you don't need.
It's too overwhelming. It's too much. You need to zone in and focus on what are your priority areas. Like yours, at least we know, detox and inflammation from a health perspective. Other people might not have those same concerns.
I mean, I'll never forget what you did with me when we did my DNA. When you went into my vitamin cupboard and you went, don't do this. Why are you doing
duplication,
this?
Duplication,
But you had hundreds of bottles.
Yeah, because I was an all or nothing.
Spending way too much money because you see this advert and you're like, I need that.
Yeah.
And then you see this advert 2 months later, I need that. And you start adding all these things together, spending way too much money, lots of duplication, stuff that your body already manufactures beautifully that you don't need. And then other stuff that you're not manufacturing, like say vitamin B, whatever. And now you're not supplementing with that. So you're like, you're in the dark. You're guessing all the time.
But you're also taking
wasting money.
But you're also taking stuff that clashes with other stuff. That was amazing. So anyone considering it, it's the ultimate for me, the data driven way to move ahead.
100%.
Okay, so the process of engaging with you around this is probably the best way to do it. Is we have that Carly pre-consult, which
that's
is
that's really only there if you're unsure of which test to do and which to go for. I think if you know that you're struggling with your gut, there's no need for the pre-consult.
So DNA gut, boom.
Yeah, book it, order the test, and it's a blood sample, so it's similar to DNA core and any of the other DNA tests we have. It's a little finger prick, and it takes about a month for the results to come back to us. And then we book the consult where we'll go through your current lifestyle, your history, and then get into the feedback of the report as well.
What I love is that it's so bespoke because everybody's gut biome is going to be so different. I mean, your DNA is so different. Your lifestyle is different. Your likes and dislikes, your preferences are different. And you can really give somebody a well-constructed, bespoke eating plan that's setting them up for success. I always say, like, what's the point in – you cannot. Steph and I cannot eat the same breakfast, lunch, dinner every day and have the same supplement cupboard. Like, you know, his likes and dislikes are different to mine. Our routines are different. What I prefer for breakfast and the way I feel afterwards is different to how he feels and how what he wants for his breakfast, you know. And I just feel like when you go and you see a professional like yourself, you've got the data, the science, you're going to send somebody for blood tests after doing DNA guts if there's anything that you're worried about, you know, you're going to go into more detail. And even if they do need a stool sample test, you'll send them for that too. And then from that, you're going to sit down with someone saying, okay, tell me all the foods you love. What are your non-negotiables, whether it's wine or chocolate or pizza once a week? You're going to take into or they can't, their joy factors, you know, things that make them want to train harder, live better is, and we all have those little things. Like for me at the moment, it's chocolate cake. Like I just have this thing every day and
every
it will be somebody.
Day.
It'll be something different in 2 weeks
time. And then
she
buys me. Now you see my problem.
But I've had to adjust the rest of my diet to allow for this chocolate cake.
And
when
I
it comes to carbs
if
and fats and things.
If there's a gluten intolerance and a starch degradation issue, I'm not going to be allowing chocolate cake until we get the gut right.
Yeah. Well,
so that is sometimes the thing that is, no, do you know what? With the tummy, because it's so sensitive and the gut is so sensitive, it requires a lot of dedication. It's different to a weight loss diet. The gut really needs a lot of dedication and discipline initially. until we start seeing some movement in the right direction, then we can start looking at maybe introducing some of those foods.
And maybe it's a flourless chocolate cake. You know what I mean? It's a gluten-free chocolate cake. And we'd have to make amendments to the recipe to allow for now this new data that I have. I can be like, I can have chocolate cake, but I can't have it with butter. I have to have it with a plant-based, you know, fat. Or I have to change the flour to a gluten-free flour.
There are always substitutes and adjustments that can be made.
But can I quickly veer us into one particular area? And that's, what do antibiotics and meds do to your gut? Antibiotics worry me.
100%.
Like whenever I take them because of what they do. And so a couple of questions. I'm looking at you, Carly. Number one is, talk to me about alcohol, medication, antibiotics. And then talk to me about, can you completely destroy the gut?
Yes.
Okay, like, can you destroy it? And then can you get it back to its original? But first start off with that. Meds for me.
So antibiotics are designed to kill harmful bacteria that might be causing a bacterial infection in the body. Mm. I think the problem with antibiotics is that they have been overprescribed over the last 10, 20 years. And unfortunately, they prescribe for the wrong conditions. So if somebody has a cold that's caused by a virus, they say, I want antibiotics. And sometimes they prescribe those antibiotics, but it's not going to work to treat a virus. It works for bacteria only. So,
which is generally a secondary infection after the virus hits. And then you land up getting like a really bad chest infection. Yeah, and then you need the antibiotics. Yeah.
But it should only be prescribed when needed and when there's a confirmed bacterial infection present. Another issue with antibiotics is that we've built up antibiotic resistance where individuals might not be finishing their course completely, or they are, you know, missing days or doses and not taking it as instructed, and that then builds up to our bodies becoming resistant to the antibiotics. So then we need new antibiotics and different types of antibiotics. So antibiotics don't only kill off the bad bacteria, they also have a huge impact on the good gut bacteria. Okay. So that's why, and if your doctor isn't giving you probiotics with your antibiotics, find a different doctor. Really, really important. And I don't think probiotics are enough, even if you're taking them with antibiotics, to completely offset the impact that those antibiotics have. It's better than nothing, but just be very cautious and don't just take antibiotics without that caution and without that consideration, because there has been research done. One of the amazing doctors from the States I was listening to, she had surgery and they said, you have to go on antibiotics. She really didn't want to. You have to. So she did. And it took a year for her microbiome to recover. And
what? Yeah, a year.
A year. Mm-hmm.
From one, I think that's what happened with me with that GOC thing, is that I had the surgery, then I had to go into anesthetic, and I had to go into antibiotics afterwards, and it destroyed my gut biome. Yeah. And then I had the diarrhea for a month, and then by the time they did the test, it probably, the whatever was wrong was fine after that. But it was definitely the antibiotic, because I don't take them often. Like, I think maybe once in 5 years, I'll go on an antibiotic. And that was obviously a very strong one from a procedure. And I think it destroyed my gut biome. So
just be careful. Of course, they necessary, they're life-saving medications, but really only take them when indicated and when necessary. Then other medication stuff, so things like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, right? NSAIDs, like Grandpa, for example, that destroys the lining of your stomach. So it can lead to ulcers and gastritis and also stomach cancer down the line. So really be careful with taking, I know some people who take a Grandpa every single day, just out of habit or because it helps them sleep or whatever the reason is.
Addiction,
but you really need to be careful with that. And it is going to have a huge impact.
Alcohol.
Okay. So alcohol can promote what we call leaky gut or disturbed permeability or intestinal barrier function. So you can think of it almost in a very colloquial way as poking holes in the gut. It really, really can interfere with that dysbiosis and the gut barrier integrity. Okay, cool. So
give me like, there's obviously this DNA gut, and then there's these tests and harvesting and irrigation and all that other stuff. But like the day-to-day natural stuff, so hydration,
water, really important. Clean
general
water.
Foods like high in fiber.
So most people aren't eating enough fiber, and women need about 25 to 30 grams at a minimum, and men need more than that, so 35 to 40 grams of fiber a day. So yeah, because people are now fasting for however many hours a day, there's no way you're going to get all your fiber in one meal. It's just not going to happen. So fiber is found in plants. There's absolutely no fiber in meat. So you only get fiber in your fruit, your veggies, your nuts, seeds, legumes, chickpeas, lentils, chia seeds, flax seeds, oats, quinoa, brown rice, all of those foods. And the reason why fiber is so important is because it helps with the formation of stool. It helps with the transit time. So it, you know, allows for the stool to move through efficiently through the tummy. And then it also really works on inflammation. So when the little bugs start digesting that fiber, because remember, fiber's not really fully digestible by us as humans. So the fiber moves through the entire gastrointestinal tract, through the tummy, through the small intestine, then it lands up in the large intestine. Mm-hmm. And that's where all of those little good bugs actually have a party when fiber lands up there. They end up breaking down.
That's their food.
That is actually their food.
And whenever I eat fiber, I think to myself, I'm feeding my gut bacteria. I'm feeding my microbiome. Like that's, I literally say, I haven't given my gut biome any fuel today. You know, like that, I worry. I can ask staff. I mean, I eat a salad every single day. I'm always eating carrots and cucumber sticks, and I'm always worrying about fiber when we travel.
I'm
like, you know, when we get, even if we're getting an Uber Eats delivery to the room and we're too tired to go out, I'm like, I'm ordering a salad. I need crunch. I need raw. I need to feed my gut bacteria. That's how I feel. Yeah. I'm so worried about it and just creating this good environment for them.
Yeah. So when those little bugs break down fiber, they produce short chain fatty acids as a byproduct. Now, those short chain fatty acids are incredibly anti-inflammatory, not only to the gut, but to the rest of the body.
Right.
So they produce these little byproducts that then travel around your body systemically and help to decrease inflammation all over the body, whether it's in the brain or the joints or the skin. So it's incredibly, incredibly important. So that's where I have a big issue with the carnivore and keto diets, which are very devoid in fiber. You cannot get enough fiber only from your dark green leafy veggies. It's just not possible. You have to be getting in the quinoas and the brown rice and the nuts and the seeds and the whole grains to reach that fiber requirement, the all brands and
things
like that.
So this is interesting. So this is the first time, like intermittent fasting, you're saying like those long periods.
Practically, yes.
Yeah. You're only eating like, one say, meal. 16, 8. Yeah, and you've got 8 hours to eat 16 hours of not eating. So you're probably having one, if not two meals in that 8 hour window. And it's really hard to get 40 grams of fiber in that period. With, like, you're going to get, it's really hard to get it.
Unless you're supplementing with a lot of psyllium husk or something. Yeah.
That's interesting. So, I'm addicted to Super Scoop because of this.
Well, it's got 5 grams of added fiber. So you would need to have, that's 10 grams. That's adding, but you also eat a lot of fruit with the skin on.
Chickpeas,
and
avo.
Definitely getting your fiber intake.
Yeah, I do.
You have your all bran nut, like, nuts.
Yeah, I have my nut bowl. So my day, just to take it.
I can probably tell you your day, Steph. I know.
Yeah, here's my day.
It's very predictable.
But it's because of Carly. So Carly said, so I'm my vitamins in the morning, right, on an empty stomach.
Can you go to the loo? Cup of tea.
Then I have a veggie juice, which has like how many vegetables?
Well, it doesn't have a hell of a lot of fiber because it's a masticating juicer. It takes out a lot of the fiber, but it is full of nutrients.
But
it's got ginger, it's got turmeric, and
cool. So there's that. And then after that, I'll have a fruit bowl.
Yeah, with all the skins on.
With all the skin on. Mm-hmm. Like quite a mound of a fruit bowl because I like it. Mm-hmm. And then I'll wait a while, and then I'll have, usually I'll have like a slice of sourdough bread with avo, chickpeas,
tomatoes.
Sometimes I'll have slivers of salmon,
mushrooms.
Eggs.
Yeah, that carries me for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And then around 2 o'clock, I'll have my nut bowl, and that nut bowl is all bran. It is a homemade granola. Mm-hmm. So our chef makes the hamburger with all the stuff.
Not so much honey and sugar and lots of dried berries.
But there is a lot of calories in there. I know. Yeah. It's tons of calories.
But your portion is a little bit distorted.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's about a half a cup of granola versus 2 tablespoons kind of thing.
I love it. I love it. It's like
not too bad.
But you know what it does? It stops me from eating any, I don't crave any sweets or anything. Exactly. It's like that's where I get my calories from.
That's your treat. What do you have that with? Almond milk? Or?
Yeah, almond. But I've got a new one now, macadamia milk. Oh, that's made delicious. In South Africa.
It's nice, hey?
That's so much. But almond milk, I'm stopping almond milk. Because you know what I've discovered? There's so much seed oils in almond milk.
A lot of plant-based milks do, and it's just to stabilize the.
Yeah, but I don't care what it's for. Yeah. I don't want that, so seed oils. In fact, I've now banned, 3 weeks ago, I banned seed oils out of the house.
Yeah, we just poured it all down the drain.
No more canolas,
drain.
No more that. We're going now avos and
olive oil.
Olives and those things.
I have
and
a again, bit of coconut oil in mine.
But based upon my heart, I stay away from some of that. But so that's, and that's like my day. What else is in
and
my
then
bag?
Dinner.
No, what else is in my
Maybe
bag?
Maybe a protein bar.
Yeah, someone's a protein bar. There's something else in my bag. Yeah, anyway, so that's that, and then dinner.
Mm.
And that's because of Carly.
And chocolate cake.
Yeah, but you started this chocolate cake thing. I come home every day and there's a chocolate cake. And when I don't eat it, then I get guilty.
Your diet is so healthy. On the days where you do a good workout, there's no harm in a cup of tea. You have no milk, no sugar in your tea. He cuts all the icing off the cake. Let's be honest. Like, I eat the ganache and the icing, and he takes it off. I mean, who does that? Anyway.
It's called cake.
Yeah, cake has icing. I mean, it's like,
by the way, Bella's like me now. Bella also carves all the icing off, and then we eat the cake.
What child does that?
You know what she does? Anyway. I carve all the icing off, all the ganache.
Yeah.
And I leave that, and then she eats that.
I don't necessarily want the cake, all the carbs and the starch. I actually just want the sweets and the fats.
No, yeah, I want the eggs and the milk, the calcium and the protein and
whatever.
Yeah, okay, so a day like that, I know
very
I'm getting
high fiber.
But I also do 2 scoops of Super Scoop at night.
Good.
I do 2 scoops.
So that's another 10 grams there.
Yeah,
so you're taking daikon.
Yeah, I'm taking daikon radish every single meal.
There's a little bit more fiber there.
Well, daikon's it's minimal. I mean, that's like really
it's
minimal.
It's a little bit.
It's not a lot. I don't think daikon plays a role
in fiber.
It
doesn't really contribute to fiber,
But let's go into that. So example, my supplements that I take, it's obviously Super Scoop. Then there's daikon radish, which is the detoxification stuff, the plenty daikon. I do the, what's the other one? Lion's mane.
Yeah. And there that lion's mane also will have an impact indirectly on the gut because of that
stress and anxiety.
Gut-brain axis again, right? So remember, a calmer brain equals a calmer gut. A calmer gut equals a calmer brain. So it has that indirect influence.
This is my biggest problem. And I think it's the majority of most people's problem out there.
Stress.
That calmer brain equals calmer gut. Calmer gut equals better brain. That connection is the chicken and egg problem for everyone.
Yeah, where does it start? You don't actually necessarily know.
Yeah, you almost have to do both at the same time.
Yes.
You got to get your gut right, understand it, who you are, do DNA gut, do all of that. And then at the same time, look at your lifestyle.
Mind. Yeah.
Well, it's a holistic intervention, though. Yeah. That's what we do, though.
Yeah.
We take into
account
everything.
We never just look at any organ in isolation or any body part in isolation. Mm. And I think if someone had to do, for example, DNA core and DNA gut together, that would give you such a nice.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So let's talk about that. So you can get the DNA gut now in two ways. You can either do it as a standalone. So right now you're listening to this for the first time. You're like, I need this test in my life.
And you've never done a DNA test.
And you've never done a DNA test. You can just do the gut, right? As a standalone test. Mm-hmm. And that includes a reporting session with you. And then afterwards you can decide if you want a healthy eating plan that you would devise. And that's, extra add-on. Or if you've done a DNA test in the last year, you can do
in this, 2025.
So in 2025. If you've done one this year, then you can add on gut and you just pay a little bit of a surcharge and then they can do the gut report for you.
It's an add-on.
It's an add-on.
Yeah, it'll be an add-on and then still a follow-up consultation with me because I've already seen you this year for DNA core or whichever test you may have done.
Sure.
So that can be added on. The reason why it's not possible for 2024 and 2023 samples is because the lab needs to rerun the DNA essentially. So we need that sample, that fresh sample.
I mean, anybody listening who's done gut in 2025, it is a no-brainer.
Or core in 2025.
Yes. Mm. I mean, sorry, anyone who's done a DNA test, core.
Yes.
This year.
Yeah.
Or they could have done health diets.
Yeah. People have actually done core this year.
Yeah, most people because of the 3-in-1. Look, for those of you listening, for me, I'm data driven. I don't like fatty stuff.
Mm.
That's how the DNA test to me is so powerful. And whenever I've been in the store, I work the store, so I slave in the store for my wife. I go to the store. When I meet people and people always ask, so what should I do first? Because if you take a look at Lisa's business kind of has three funnels to bring you in. One is the athleisure. So you're probably somebody that's conscious of how you look, da, da, da. And then when we kind of catch you there with body kind, the bra or the leggings or whatever, then you kind of find out about rebounding, and then you find out about all the other supplements and plenty.
You can't help
and all
but be
that.
Exposed to them all at some stage. Yeah.
Or you come in through, you know, the plenty pathway, which is like, okay, you've got a lion's mane that's got the best efficacy in South Africa, or your daikon radishes, what is this thing? And then through that, you start understanding about rebounding.
Mm.
And you understand about it. But whenever someone meets me, and they always say, I always say, if you want to start the journey with us, start with DNA. Don't start rebounding. Ignore the athleisure for a bit. Ignore the supplements, because you don't know if it's the right supplement for me, you or not. Start with your DNA. Like, if you're listening to this and you're like, what should I do next? Because I also want to ask you guys about exercise. But exercise is such an obvious one, because yes, you move your belly. I know that my tummy is better when I'm
rebounding.
Fit. You know what? Not rebounding, just when I'm running.
Yeah.
Running does it a lot
movement,
for me.
Babe, movement, because that helps with peristalsis. Exactly. Yeah. Rebounding is very good. Hey, it's been proven now that rebounding helps
it
with
really
the peristalsis
works.
And getting it active again, especially if you've been taking some laxatives and your colon's lazy.
Yeah.
It helps to kind of get that contraction going again, the natural contraction. So if you are somebody that suffers with constipation or just like a lazy bowel, rebounding is definitely going to help you if you're consistent with it, you know?
Yeah.
And also stress, you know, this whole stress and anxiety thing linked to gut health. If you're exercising, you're taking away a lot of the adrenaline, you are secreting all those happy hormones naturally, and it's going to make you feel less stressed, less anxious, and that's going to have a direct effect on your gut. So,
you know, can I ask you this? Like, so should I go do a DNA test right away and get this done, or should I start exercising? Because it feels like, you know, what I'm listening to on podcasts everywhere, like everything seems to be coming down to move. Movement is medicine. Now, I know when someone's got a chronic condition, it's a different thing. We're not diagnosing it in that way. But like, generally speaking, people are too sedentary. They're eating too many processed foods. Mix that up with stress and pressure and social media, putting this thing in your head that you're not living.
Not enough sleep.
You're not living the lifestyle that you should. You're not, and you're all this like external pressure, and that all leads to like a messed up system. But when you start moving,
your brain becomes
everything. That's what I've picked up with my 30-day consistency challenge. Is that when I'm 30 days consistent, everything lines up.
Amazing.
My tummy lines up, my sleep lines up, my eating habits line up, like everything. But exercise is that foundation to everything.
Number one, it's going to improve mood. Without a doubt, when you're exercising, you're going to improve mood, especially if you do it in the morning. It's going to set you up for the whole day. It's going to boost your metabolism.
You?
It's going to energize
you. Can I disagree
you.
With you?
What?
I'll disagree, because the last challenge I did was the most difficult one I did, because I was going through the toughest.
Yeah, but no, it wasn't the exercise that was hard. It was the fact that you weren't getting enough sleep. So you were going to bed too late because you were studying, and then you weren't getting the sleep. So when you woke up in the morning, you could have slept for another 2 hours, but you had to wake up to start the live and do your challenge.
Yeah.
So it actually wasn't the exercise that was hard. It was the fact that you weren't sleeping that made the exercise hard to get up. So it was like all
the
length.
The body is such a
But I just want to say with exercise, for me, it's the lowest hanging fruit.
Diet is
so hard to change because we are emotionally connected to food.
Right.
Food is like, it's a habit thing. It's a family time thing. It's stuff that you brought in from your past. It's emotional. It's lovely. It's delicious. It's linked to so many different things.
Yeah.
Whereas like exercise is like an easy one because you're adding, you're not taking away. You're adding the movement into your day, but like your diet can for the first part kind of stay the same, and you just start with one variable, the low hanging fruit one. Whereas with diet, a lot of the time it's like changing your fat, or it's like eliminating now wheat or dairy. It's a harder thing to change. So I often say to people, get your DNA done, of course, but whilst you're doing that, start moving, because 100%. Everything's going to fix itself when you start moving. You're going to feel more energized. You're going to sleep better. Digestion's going to improve. You're going to burn
more
calories.
Happy.
You're just going to feel more positive. Your outlook on life will change. Your perception of everything will change. Just start moving. Even if it's walking. Rebounding is obviously the thing I love to advocate because it is so much fun and it's so good for so many reasons. But just move. If you just start moving every day, like 10 minutes, then 15 minutes, then 30 minutes, that will change so much.
I tend to agree with Lee's stuff. Also, if you're feeling a bit stuck, you have to start. Yes. You have to start somewhere. And right. DNA is a lot of information. And I think it's important to like get the ball rolling as well and get into that healthy, positive mindset that exercise can bring us, and then be ready to receive the information and the recommendations. When somebody's feeling very lost and overwhelmed, DNA can be wonderful, but you've got to be ready to start and commit and make the changes. You're not going to get the results unless you do what the report is telling you to do and what I'm telling you to do. So I think that's where some people might go wrong. And I've said it before, where they do their DNA, they get all the information, and then they do nothing with it. And then it's, you have all this knowledge and all this understanding, but you're not implementing, you're not doing.
Just by the way, I know from Lisa's business perspective, we love people that don't listen to us. Just by the way, if you're listening to this.
No, I don't.
No, I do. From a pure commercial.
Okay, well, you might be the back office team, but the front office team likes the marketing, the sexiness, when clients get results.
I hate it when people don't listen to me.
No, because you know what happens? They don't listen. They don't listen. They listen. They ping us. They do the DNA, a little bit of a DNA test. They don't do it. And then suddenly they go to the doctor. And the doctor says, boom. And then they want to spend hundreds of thousands of rands on us to fix stuff. That, to us, capitalistically speaking, is the best client. The desperate person that will throw money at everything. And we don't want you to get there.
No.
We don't. And that's why I think all of this stuff is preventative. Go do your DNA gut test. Go do your DNA core test. Yes, it costs thousands of rands. People are like sticker shock with that. I'm like, okay, how much does a keto diet cost you over a 24-month period? Or an intermittent fasting thing? And your medical aid that's going to kick in when things go wrong.
And all of these crazy unlabeled supplements that these weight loss clinics are selling you. That drives me nuts.
That's injections and whatnot.
So what I find with our greatest DNA testimonies is the financial benefits. I don't know if you've heard this, but people do, they say, you know how much money it's saving me? Because now I'm
I don't necessarily hear that. Yeah.
Well, for me, I was one of those. On supplements, you saved me about, I mean, I was spending thousands of rands a month on supplements, and I spend less, half that.
Or trying different interventions, going and trying this diet, and then trying that injection, and then trying this weight loss thing, and then trying, you know, rolling your fat away, and like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and then it's cryogenics machines, and all these things, you know, when actually it just comes down to, guys, we need to be moving in a nice low impact manner to reduce inflammation. We need to be eating correct for our DNA, supplementing appropriately, eliminating properly, sleeping in rest, you know, having the adequate rest. When you look at all of those things, and it takes time. It can take
putting
a year
in the
to
work
sort out.
Also, there's no quick
You've
fix.
Got to put in the work. But the point is, I want to, the people listening to this though, I think it's all about deciphering the stuff, and not, it's no more guesswork. It's data beats opinion. So you're going to go and do this DNA gut test. We're recommending that you do DNA core and DNA gut. If you've done DNA core now,
Add augmented DNA gut. From this year,
yeah, and then that's such a complete picture, because DNA core has health, diet, and sport inside of it, and now you're adding gut. Those four tests are extraordinarily empowering. I think it make it so the way you move, the way you sleep, what you're putting into your body, your lifestyle, your stress levels. I mean, it is so empowering when you've got that data. And a lot of people will think, what's the difference between our DNA tests and anyone else's? I must be honest, I'm looking at you, it's Carly. The people out there go get DNA tests. I've seen Brian Abana with DNA tests in his hand Facebook. And like everyone's punting DNA tests. But the problem is, when you get the data back, it is encyclopedic. It's arcane. It's difficult. Like, you don't know, like, what does this mean?
Explained to you in layman's terms.
Well, not even explained. I mean, you can shove it into ChatGPT. You can literally take your diet results and shove it into ChatGPT and ask ChatGPT. But the problem is, you need a human being like Carly to sit down with you. That intervention that we bundle in with our tests. And people also tell you that your test is expensive. Oh, no, you're getting like 60 to 90 minutes of Carly. Dedicated.
90 to 120.
Yeah. It always goes over, actually.
Yeah. Okay, so you're getting like 2 hours of Carly, which I think is medical aid deductible and all that other stuff. But the point is that you're getting someone that is a human being that's going to listen to, that's going to look at, listen, read between the lines. That's what you do
putting
often.
Putting the puzzle pieces together.
Together, right? Yeah. And you've done, we tried to calculate other, I think you're over 1,000 DNA tests.
Over 2,000.
Over 2,000 DNA tests. And Lisa's probably close to 1,000 or something in her. So we've got people here that have done thousands of interventions. And there is not one DNA test that we've done with somebody. They've wanted their money back, or they thought it wasn't valuable or anything. Nobody. Everyone that does it and they do the changes, the testimonies are extraordinary. So if you don't want to waste time, if you want to get to who you specifically are, uniquely are, Get your bloody DNA test done. I mean, I just, people come and they go, I do intermittent fasting and I've lost X amount of weight. I'm like, yeah, but do you know what? All the other things that may have gone wrong. You may be looking good. You may have lost, but that's such a singular way to approach it. And I think our way is more holistic. I think it's more specific. So the results are more predictable. And I've seen from the outside in people doing this. I've seen myself with you, Carly, that like the changes that you've made and the tests. I mean, I'll never forget my cholesterol levels.
That was very cool. And that was,
And that guy wanted to put me on statins.
Yeah, it was quite quick.
It was 3 months.
Yeah, I went to the top cardiologist in South Africa. Remember, I got to that guy. And I found him and I got, and then he looked at me and he said, da da da. And we went for bloods and he found out the big cholesterol markers in him. And then I gave it to Carly. And Carly looked, said, okay, DNA test, bloods, blah, blah, blah. Don't do the statins. Do X, Y, and Z. Let's first try this.
And you changed the oil that you were using in
changed the oil in my food. And like, it wasn't even different. But the point is, when I went back for my...
repeat bloods,
He was like...
What did you do?
What did you do? And this is top cardiologist. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Because it went from like chronic to like completely and utterly healthy. Shockingly normal.
And what's also important to note is that you do have a genetic predisposition for high cholesterol. So you beat that with diet and lifestyle and supplementation, which is often such a... I mean, now we're talking about cholesterol. We were talking about gut.
It's important. It's DNA.
It's linked to DNA. And I think that someone thinks that my dad had high cholesterol, my mom had high cholesterol. It's familial, it's genetic. There's nothing more I can do except for take a statin. It's so untrue. And like, you really were proof
stop
in the pudding.
Stop being lazy. People take the lazy way out, though. They just like kind of diagnose themselves.
There's little changes that you made, but and that cholesterol came down beautifully.
It was a lot of little changes.
Yes.
When I had to start moving.
The cheese.
The smarties. The pizza.
Coconut oil.
Let's just lay into stuff. I wanted to talk about something. Okay, so with the DNA gut, there's pillars, right? There's like four or five different pillars that they kind of focus on. The one that really fascinated me, because we've just come out of winter and, well, at the moment around us, there's so many people are sick. I mean, just yesterday I was having like a bit of the sniffles. Bella's been sick. Staff's been sick. Our whole household's been sick. Even some of our studio staff have been sick. And I'm like, oh, hell. And yesterday I was like on the brink of getting something, and today, and I've had this about four or five times this year, where for one day I feel like I'm about to get flu or cold, and then I just do all the right things, I get a good night's sleep, I take, you know, some of the meds or whatever, and like boom, the next day I'm like, I'm not sick. And I've just been very proud, touch wood, of my immune system this year. Like, oh my word, like I don't know what I'm doing differently.
No, but you're empowered. You know somehow what you're doing.
Well, yes, but I just wanted to talk about, with DNA guts, I know that 70 to 80% of our immune system actually comes from our gut. It's developed in our gut. And I don't think people realize the correlation, because there's a lot of people this year that have had a lot of sicknesses. The flu this winter has been
really bad. Yeah.
And like the link between DNA, gut, and the immune system, to understand that, so that we can, yes, we're going to get sick, but maybe you don't get sick for as long, or it doesn't develop into bacterial infection. Then you have to go on an antibiotic, which further like affects the gut.
It's this vicious cycle.
And you're taking 3 weeks off training, and you're taking time off work and all of that. So yes, you're going to go down. And I think even having a flu or a cold once a year is good for the immune system to build it up. But, you know, how come some of us can bounce back so quick? And has it got something to do with the gut? And is that something that they test for?
I think, the immune connection in DNA gut is looked into and, researched and tested for in DNA gut. I think it's also very linked to inflammation and oxidative stress, which is also two specific pathways covered in DNA gut as well. And usually what I see is people who have calmer genes in the inflammatory cascade pathway tend to bounce back better from illness, or get sick less often, or have a better controlled immune system. But there's so many factors that go into immunity, right? It's exposure, it's your exercise, it's where you live, it's the food you eat, it's the air you breathe, it's all of these factors. So it is quite complex. But yes, if you're wiping out your gut all the time with loads of antibiotics and processed foods and alcohol and stress, you're not going to have that immune resilience that should be there from all of the beneficial good gut bacteria.
Okay, we got to end. And I just want to say, so first of all, you're listening to this ad-free. The one thing we want to thank is Solid Gold Studios. You guys always do such an amazing job, like doing this for us, etc. But Carly's here pro bono, guys. We don't pay Carly to do this. I don't pay Lisa to do this.
I
get paid in kind to do this. But the whole thing is about, it's about giving back and just empowering people. Mm-hmm. And we're not advertising anyone. And if we've mentioned the product on the podcast, it's not for any other reason. It's by the by. It's not because anything. We just want to give back. Mm-hmm. And the whole objective.
I mean, we want to see people succeed.
Yeah.
I mean, our whole thing with all the different parts of our company is this personalized, targeted intervention approach. Like, we really want to try and help people to have a bespoke outlook. You cannot be eating the same as your husband and your children. You cannot be eating the same as a friend or something that you find on Instagram or, you know, something in a magazine. Like, you really need to take your health a bit more seriously and have a very sort of targeted approach. And the way that you're feeling right now does not have to be the way that you're feeling in 5 years' time. You don't have to be spending 20,000 rand a year on it either. People are wasting their money. You can do a test or two, a DNA test, some bloods, see a professional like Carly, sort out your health once and for all, understand your body once and for all, lose that weight once and for all, like understand and take out all the guesswork, which can cause so much anxiety. It's such a waste of money. It causes a lot of women, guys, stress. Mm-hmm. I mean, around me right now, I am surrounded by sick people. Not just like flu from winter.
Chronically
but
sick.
But really sick. Like, it's actually quite crazy. I've had about 6 or 7 people close to me that have found out that they've got like stage 4 cancer, or they've just finished going through 6 months of radiation and chemotherapy, or there's something like drastically wrong with them. They've got like out the blue vertigo and this and that and this and that. And I'm just like, it's all around me at the moment. And like, health is everything. It's all we have. We can't achieve our goals. We can't travel to the places we want to travel to. We don't have energy for our partners and our children. We can't, you know, achieve what we want to in this world without our health at the center of it all. And yet people are so scared to spend the money on understanding their bodies and what makes it different to the person next to you, and just supplement according to your body, eat according to your body type, like, you know, according to your genetics, train appropriately, like just understand it once and for all, empower yourself, change your life, feel great and achieve those dreams.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point in all this hard work, the sacrifice, this grits and grind, when in 10 years time, you're going to get diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and all the money you have in the bank that you should have spent on preventative medicine or preventative interventions, you're now spending on hospital bills and blood tests and chemotherapy and you can't even go traveling and you can't enjoy your life. And I'm seeing that a lot now. There's a lot of regrets around me. People that are sick that are saying, like, I really should have done this before. I can't believe I've got, you know, stage 4 cancer, and I had no idea that I, you know, because it only has presented itself now at the end with some pain. And it's too late. There's absolutely nothing that there's a couple of them can do. It's like, it literally is too late, and they're in their 50s. And it's devastating because
it
could have been prevented.
And I think sometimes also important to remember that sometimes these cancers can happen even if you are the healthiest, most diligent person in the world. And I had a patient like that recently, actually. He did his DNA, we did bloods, there were no warning signs, nothing. A couple of months later, there was this tiny, tiny, insignificant tumor that wasn't even detectable on the most fancy, advanced scanning machines. So sometimes it's not your fault. I think that's also important to remember. There's lots we can do to prevent it, but there are these nasty things that are coming around that are not necessarily the patient's fault.
But those are like the few and far betweens. I think that 90% of the people that are getting sick out there, whether it's autoimmune disorders,
can be linked to
inflammation,
lifestyle.
Whether it's cancer, whether it's, you know, cognitive decline and stuff, could have been something that they really could have done about it. And it's like, do you really want to sit with that guilt? I mean, I'm sure that patient of yours has no guilt, right? Because it's nothing that he could have done to prevent it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just, it's an anomaly.
He was active, it's a gawk.
It's one of those gawks.
Yeah.
But if you're sitting there and you know that you could have done something about it, and you did this,
then
and
there
this,
will be that.
All that guilt that you're taking to your death, like, oh my gosh, no. Yeah. I don't want to ever have that. I want to know I did my best with the knowledge I had, and that if I do get sick, well, then that's God's plan for me.
Yes.
You know, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just on that happy note.
No, I just think we have I've said this so many times that we have so much more power than we think we do. You know, a lot of the time, like Carly said, you know, people think it's their genetics. Like, if my parents had it, I'm going to have it. If my parents are obese, I'm going to be obese. Mm. If my granddad died of breast cancer, I'm going to die of breast cancer. And it's not true.
It's not
absolutely
inevitable.
But you know what?
Inevitable.
Just in closing, I think we live in the most amazing age. Like, people said,
do you?
Like, we do. We really do. I mean, we've got all the tools.
All the
all
data.
The tools. Everything. So much it's data. Just, it's up to you whether you're going to utilize them, live the best derivative of yourself, or you're going to succumb. It's actually an extraordinary age. I mean, I'd never want to go back to any Same. Other age, like a day before penicillin, or you keep going back. Like, this is the most incredible. And DNA to me is just such a beautiful thing. Like, I'm very analytical. So for me, I love the data. I love knowing what I'm uniquely constituted.
Empowering.
It's so empowering. Yeah. And when you make the change to see how your body responds relative to that, it's so empowering. So we want to encourage everyone to go and do it. DNA Gut, it's live now on lisariley.com. We'll start off with the intervention with Carly. If you've already done DNA Core, add it as an augment to it. It's less of a cost. If you've never done it before, consider doing DNA Core and DNA Gut together. Mm. I think that's the most complete picture. But, you know, save up for it. There's payment plans on the site, all of that. But it's the greatest investment. If you're thinking of a gift for somebody, I can't think of a better gift, especially a young person. We gave out Bethany and Amber gifts, and Bella's done it too. I think it's... And everything that Beth and Amber now do is based upon, they speak about it all the
time.
They're
doing so well.
They're doing so well. Yeah. The way they handle stress, the way they eat, they already know if I do this, oh, wait, I know how that's going to, that's very, very empowering. Mm. And all the things before the test that they used to deal with is gone now. Mm. And I think that's the greatest gift that you can give your child, someone that you love, a 100%. Family member or a friend. So yeah, thank you, ladies. Another
awesome.
One done.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Solid Gold. Thank you, Shannon.
And until such time, don't frown, look down.
What's the Bristol chart?
Yeah,
Bristol stool chart.
Do not Google it.
Bristol stool chart. Go Google it.
Don't Google it at home. Don't Google it at work.
No, share it with your colleagues.
Yeah.
Come on. Let's be
What's
let's
that
be
shit on
force.
Your screen?
Literally.
At least you won't be full of it anymore.
Okay, guys. Ciao, ciao.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.